Introduce everyone here. I am Doreen Davis, town supervisor. To my left is Patrick McAuliffe, our deputy supervisor, Jared Giordiano, one of our councilmen, town clerk Elizabeth Izzo, councilman Paul Vosburg, councilperson Dawn Scannapieco, our code officer Elliot Fishman, our town attorney Michael Smith.
You're listening to a live broadcast from WGXE Acre at 90.7 FM from the Catskill Town Meeting. It's beginning with a public hearing tonight.
And I thought maybe I would just take a moment before we entertain all comments, and we'll stay for as long as there are comments. I wanted to level set everyone just on the events that led up to the public hearing this evening. A planning board application was received in January.
Oh, hi, Jared.
Hi, Jason. Planning board application received in January for 60 campground sites on 84 acres. And the planning board, who is an independent operational entity for the town of Catskill, probably two centuries ago there was a decision made that the town would be governed in terms of planning and zoning by the planning board and the zoning board. Planning board came to the town board and said, something bigger than we've had, something a little bit different than we've had, and then looking at what we currently have on the books, we may want to get together and have a conversation. So at the request of the planning board, the town board initiated a review. And rather than issuing a moratorium, which is what you normally do, which would suspend all development, we determined that perhaps we could work in parallel in a more efficient fashion by setting up a working group. And the working group consisted of our planning board chair, our code officer, our town attorney, myself, and our zoning board chair, I believe, Gary Harvey. And each of the zoning and planning board chairs would then go back into their organization and update them along with the board. So that group started shortly right after January. So that was February. And they had a series of meetings. And what they did was they reviewed the existing law, and they drafted a new law, which is what we are here tonight to review, which was posted 10 days ago?
At least.
On the website, notice of public hearing posted through normal processes. And this evening's exercise, which is always done before a local law is passed, is open for a public hearing for public comment. So that's what tonight is. No law has been passed. No law will be passed this evening. The purpose of this evening is to receive input, make the appropriate observations, changes if required, reopen this public hearing, which will recess tonight. We will not adjourn it. That's important language so that we can continue this conversation, and then see what we need to do to move forward. There have been several communications that we've received through mail, snail mail, as we call it. We've had multiple conversations with some of our business owners in the community who have campground facilities currently or who are interested perhaps in moving forward. I will tell you that we have very different points of view on how our property is being purchased and developed recently. So in this particular instance, we have a lot of interest in developing the business. We had a meeting 4 or 6 weeks ago where we had the same amount of people in this room who didn't want anything to happen in terms of development. So somehow the board, the planning, zoning, and everyone needs to come to some sort of an equilibrium where we can all hopefully support our tax base, encourage our businesses, and keep an ear towards people who are looking to kind of, when they moved here, wanted it to be really, really quiet and don't want anything to happen. So that's the balance. The other thing I will say respectfully is that we can't govern by social media because some of our community isn't on social media and it wouldn't be fair to them. So there was a fair amount of commentary about this in some of our social media corners. You won't find any of us responding unless we're correcting a date or something like that, because it tends to take you down a rabbit hole that sometimes you can't come back out of. So we prefer to have you here or call us or any one of us. And with that, I will open up to public comment. The only thing I would ask is we be all respectful of each other, and that when you do speak, if you would just give us a moment to learn your name and where you are in terms of the community. Jason Capernaum.
Jason, I am not the Wake the Week candidate for why we have this public hearing. I have a campground in the process on Castle Road in Catskill, 79 Castle Road by Ballywick. The Discovery Zoo of animals supply to go with Game Farm. In the process of, you know, becoming completely up to date with our health department and bringing that up to speed, we work directly with the town. That's been very good with us moving forward. In return, I wanted to expand that business. Business in Catskill is good when it's operating, and we wanted to expand our business, moving to a larger site on Carrow Junction Road along the Carrow border of Catskill, and presented to our planning board, of which the size and scale of my proposal was larger than most business propositions coming into the town, and the concerns were arose, and therefore there was a lot more discussion after, you know, having some public outcry about other businesses in the area. It was probably good to fully analyze my project moving forward, of which these laws are now being updated from 19 whatever when they were created, which is okay. What I would like to see is that there is an equilibrium found of both what New York State allows for camping and campgrounds, and, you know, where the town is falling currently in their laws, of which my largest concern is our density formula. How do we calculate how many sites are allowed on the campground? So traditionally, across the state has a minimum lot requirement of 1,250 square feet, roughly the size of this area of the ring. A campground just over the border in Caro just had a 40-site expansion over at the Whippoorwill up to the health department standards. They upgraded, increased 40 sites. Business is good in Catskill, Caro, and they follow that formula. Currently, our density formula presented is, it's a little more intense in how to calculate it, but it's 1 acre minus wetlands setbacks to calculate a usable acre, and that however many acres you own on the property allows for how many sites you can have. So if you currently own a campground on 20 acres that has 30 sites, you will never be able to expand without some variance or approval process, which I don't know the extent of if it could be allowed that way, but I assume you ask for permission. You would have to actually acquire, you know, numerous more acres to just be allowed by your right in the formula to expand. What I would like to propose, though I offered a large tract of land, which hopefully could be expanded if things are good in the future, that we calculate that density formula closer to the New York State minimum lots rather than the current restricted form of roughly 35 times more restrictive to grow than our neighbors in Caro and Athens and Saugerties. I just want to become closer to where those neighboring townships offer the ability to grow as a campground. The rest of the language, though it's a lot more in detail than you'll see in neighboring towns, has a great degree of thought. And, you know, that kind of campground to me, is okay based on my presentation, and I can understand if other people are impacted and have a concern with that, but my greatest concern is with the density formula of the new proposed law.
If I'm not...
This is Jerry Schroeder. If I could dovetail off that.
Sure.
Because right now, you know, from an infrastructure perspective at least, Mike Van Brown would be grandfathered. However, any additional amenity would throw me right under this law, which means no expansion at all, ever, right? Not even an amenity. And if it did, I would not be able to invent acreage. I have 73 sites, and I have 17 acres. Even if I bought the entire farm next year, 50 acres, that would give me 67. Still wouldn't be able to expand a single site. Now, that would put me in violation. That would basically, if I was cited for the violation at that point, if I don't fix that and create acreage I don't have within 5 days, I risk 30-day jail. Now, after that, if it's still not rectified anytime within 5 years, which means could be the seventh day after they've said, hey, you don't have enough acreage for your campground, I'm in jail for a year. Same thing goes for every single item here. Unsightly picking chairs. We have purple picking chairs. My wife likes picking purple. Personally, I think they're unsightly. Now, that means literally in a scenario, we've written a law here where within 7 days, someone can make a complaint, come in and say, oh, they have unsightly picking table, looks like a campground. Well, for one, that person is confidential. I don't get to know who that is. But code enforcement comes in, they look at the evidence. Yes, they're unsightly. I don't like them in purple. Again, within a 7-day period, I can be guilty, spend a year in jail, do not get to face my accuser, and my Fourth Amendment rights for illegal search and seizure have been violated. Because the law says you don't need that. Right? But the United States law says you have to have a warrant if you're coming in for a criminal issue that's going to cause you jail time. It's as simple as that. So I think that there are aspects here that have to be looked at. Now, I know towns say this all the time. We wouldn't do that. We want a law to say we can do that at our women anytime we want, but we wouldn't do that. It wouldn't happen like that. But the law says it can. Now, you guys are sitting here now, you're all reasonable people. What happens to the next person elected? Next person who, you know, next person who joins the board? What are they going to do? They might say, hey, you know, I have a grudge against this person. I have the ability here to put them in jail in 7 days because I know they don't have the ability to repaint all their picking tables in 7 days. Right? So you give somebody the ability here to utilize this law to literally put someone in jail for a year. I think it's unreasonable.
Elliot.
Just wanted to clarify a couple of things. With regard to your expansion, the additional acres would be used to calculate your additional campsites. It wouldn't impact the acreage that you have now. So if you were to buy 20 additional acres, you would be able to have 20 additional campsites.
That's a beautiful thing. It doesn't actually say this. Say that.
Or maybe we don't understand
it. Or maybe we don't understand it. Yeah. But that would be my concern if we move forward. And I know they talked about possibly having a committee where some of the business owners could contribute. We'd like to make sure that those things are made clear.
So we need to expand the grandfather clause to cover those things.
Yeah. So what we're going to do tonight, just so everyone knows, so I don't want to, you know, make a decision on all of these sitting right here. What I'd like to do is make a laundry list of these and then put a group together that includes yourself and anyone else that, you know, that it makes it logistically possible for us to work together as a group. And put all these things down, okay? So, for instance, the grandfathering thing, your existing property versus the 20, that made sense to me, but clearly to someone who who read it, it sounds like you were going to have to do the math on your old. Your current environment is completely grandfathered. So
does that include if we wanted to put a spray pool in? Are we grandfathered? So we could add an amenity?
The amenities don't detract from the additional campsites.
Yes. They don't take away from your...
Well, maybe, like I said, maybe we don't understand.
From what I read, the only thing that detracts is the residents of the camp manager.
But if we're considered grandfathered by Portland, and we're considered grandfathered exactly the way we are, which if we try to do anything new, meaning a spray pool, that all of a sudden we would be pushed right into
your whole site?
No, everything.
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. Traditionally, grandfathering
is existing business.
Existing business in
right,
that.
But like with our pool,
right?
We've been told by the Board of Health that we want to make any substantial changes to our swimming pool, and they did this over at Rip Van Winkle. They had to bring absolutely everything up to code in order to put that big pool in place.
From the Department of Health.
Department of Health.
Department of Health.
That's got to be their regulation.
Yeah.
But where some of his items were grandfathered, which is where we're misunderstanding. Then what does grandfathering mean? It means as long as you stay exactly the way you are, you're fine.
Right.
And if you try to do anything different, you're in trouble.
Grandfathering does not release you from any New York State regulations, including the Department of Health, or any changes in, let's say, the manner you have. If you're doing an electric upgrade, you're doing a pool upgrade, Those conditions are always looked at the current regulations.
Right.
New York State law would apply. Department of Health law would apply, and
right,
those upgrades. This law doesn't speak to upgrades.
It speaks to amenities and
yes, but any amenity that is being upgraded or changed and needs. Is regulated by the Department of State or the Health Department would have to conform to whatever existing laws were in place at that point in time.
Exactly, but would it have to conform to your new
background?
No. You see where my confusion is then, because I understand I have to conform to anything new under the Board of Health.
So the Department of Health, state trumps...
Right.
Local.
But you understand my confusion.
Yeah. Sure.
Because if I know how that works,
right.
How would I know that this doesn't work like that?
Right.
Well, you're not adding any existing camp spaces to your park right now. You're just upgrading, maybe upgrading buildings or upgrading infrastructure or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Doesn't apply.
Yeah. No. That
right.
Doesn't apply.
Okay.
However. In the interest of clarity,
okay.
Right, the note will be taken that we need to further flesh out grandfather definitions.
Okay.
The other thing that was just brought to my attention, go ahead, Elliot, you also had some other offerings.
I just want to allay some of your concerns. If I come to the campsite and I don't like your picnic table, I think it's unsightly. You know, I would issue a violation. I don't put handcuffs on you and take you to jail at that point. You know, I issue a violation. If you want to contest it, or, you know, you go to town court, we both present our side of it, show the judge the picture of the picnic table, and he says, I think it's fine. Elliot, yeah. So.
Right,
or
he's biased in some way, and he doesn't say it's fine because he's in agreement with everybody else on the town board that these people gotta go.
But so maybe we need to change the word in there, unsightly. Just going back to what he said, purple. You may not like the color purple, and you think it's unsightly. So you say
unsafe. Unsafe.
Change the verbiage.
I think the intent was to make it similar to the existing junk chapter of the town code.
Right.
And so we can sort of change the language to...
Right, if a picnic table is unsafe, first of all, it shouldn't be out there.
Right.
And we pull in all picnic tables that are unsafe. And we bring them up to the garage area, and we pull out the good pieces and we put new picket tents together by putting all those good pieces together. They're sitting there, and obviously they're on the property, but they're in a workspace, not in a camping space.
Right.
And we buy 10 to 12 new ones each year.
Right.
Right. So this doesn't address that.
So if I were to take the month of May in the town of Catskill, and I took a look at our code officer enforcement report, we had 22 complaints, some of which you may have driven by in our community and you may have called us about. No, but I mean, I'm saying generically, well, if you're on 23B and you can't drive literally on the road because there are things that have come out into the road. So some of this language is consistent with the junk law because we have challenges in our community around that. Not meant directly towards camping.
Junk law people get put in jail?
Well, there's a
they go before the
they go before the yeah. they go before
they
the courts.
If the junk
if
law,
the
I've not in 12 years I was town supervisor.
You can't actually.
There were cases where individuals went before the court. Not one was ever placed in jail, and there were other fines.
So why do we need such harsh language in here if that's never going to come to fruition?
Well, it's not an option up to the town. It's an option up to the judge. So,
but it's stated in here. 30 days a year.
And it's stated in our junk law, too. So the judge has the option of doing that, and rarely is there any reason for an individual. Unless he or she or the place is so has been so many violations and just forgets it and just won't do it. So that's like the ultimate alternative. But I've never known anyone. They usually get fined, or they just say you have 30 days to correct your.
Let me run you through how the code enforcement office works with the Justice Court. In the event that there is a violation that's brought to the attention of the code enforcement office, the first thing that the code enforcement office tries to do is to find out what the facts are. Normally, that comes as a result of a visiting to the site, speaking to the owner of the property, determining the accuracy of the complaint that is brought to the attention of the code enforcement officer. And in the event that there is some substance to the issue that's been brought before the code enforcement office, then a process of informal mediation takes place between the property owner and the code enforcement officer. And I would imagine that 95% of the complaints that are made and that are subject to this informal mediation are settled. And it is a rare case when the code enforcement officer is compelled to then bring the matter to another level. Now, that other level is in the event that the mediation process does not resolve the issue and there is an impasse between the code enforcement office and the property owner, then there is a legal process that's begun by the code enforcement officer. The facts related to the complaint are sent to the property owner. There is a formal notice to comply. We're not in court yet. There's a formal notice to comply. There is a time set for a complaint. This is after, by the way, the informal mediation. In the event that you don't comply within that time period, well then, at that point, there is going to be a court date that's set, in which you then this matter is then taken out of the hands of the code enforcement office, and it is brought before the Justice Court. Now, when it is brought before the Justice Court, there'll be a date for an appearance. And the code enforcement officer will appear, and the property owner will appear to present the issues before the Justice Court. The first thing that the Justice Court wants to do is to see whether the thing can be resolved without wasting any more of the court's time. The last thing that the court wants to do is to resolve this through a judicial determination. And that's not only because that's in the best interest of the members of the community, but it also saves the time of the Justice Court in processing through litigation, which is totally wasteful and takes time with the court and it's administratively expensive.
See, that sounds totally reasonable.
Please, let me finish.
Sure.
So then, in the event that it can't be, then if the court resolves that the property owner is not in compliance with the law, then he will set a penalty. He could, if, and by the way, if the property owner refuses to accept the suggestion of the Justice Court concerning how this matter should be resolved, then the court will then comply, will then look at the law and determine that there should be a fine. Now, for a first offense, there can be a fine of up to $500. In my years in practicing before the Justice Court, I have only seen one or two rare cases which were egregious in which the court imposed a substantial fine. Most fines are comparable to the issue at hand. With regard to the imposition of a fine, then the property owner has to pay the fine and has to then comply with the law. In the event that the property owner does not comply with the law, despite the judgment of the court, well then that property owner is going to be brought back to court and is going to then have to advise the court why there isn't compliance.
When
so it escalates.
And if you look at our junk law, this was a direct lift from the junk law.
And that sounds very reasonable.
Uh-huh.
It sounds more reasonable than the way it's written.
Okay.
You can come in any time, you get 5 days or you get 30 days.
Okay. It doesn't say that, sir. It doesn't say that.
When I read it, that's how I interpreted it.
Well,
okay, so,
you see, it doesn't say that.
So we have the junk law lift. From an editing perspective, you know, we could have 100 editors here, and then I would have to stick a pen in my eye, okay? So I let's stipulate that there's some interpretation issues. We'll take another look at it, but it is consistent with Law 115-24. And actually, the next step on that is if we had a situation, and we've had them, where we've had junk that has not been addressed or removed, the town holds a public hearing and says to everyone, we're about to expend some town funds to get it cleaned up, and then we're going to put that on the individual's tax bill because we can't get it cleaned up. So there's a series of steps here, and I'd hope in the interest of letting other people speak that you can see.
I just want to throw one more thing out there, and then
sure.
I'll be quiet for a while. From an operational perspective,
uh-huh.
One, we would want to make sure that, you know, from a grandfather's perspective, the operational issues as well are grandfathered. We have a sign on Thruway, has a campground. An RV pulls in, you can check in, they board an RV, sleeps 8 people. They got 8 people in the RV. Operationally, I would have to say, I'm sorry you can't stay
right
here.
That actually was brought to our attention. It's on our list of things to address.
I actually had a conversation with
my aunt and uncle used to have 6 kids, and they were the drivers, and that would have been 8, and we would have had to separate the family. So, understood. Okay?
I'll give someone else a chance.
Thank you. Others? Yes, ma'am.
The two previous speakers are owners of campgrounds. A flyer has been circulating, and the paragraph reads that The town is hastily trying to pass a law that will likely prohibit any future camping or RVing throughout the town, including limitations on private residents being able to have friends, family camping at their homes. I did not read the proposed new law, but I am curious to know if, in fact, that is a change that's being made.
So, Mike, Elliot, do you want to? It's in the back. And then also,
that was placed on the town website. Talk about if you had four or less campsites on the property that this law wouldn't apply to.
Okay.
We have an additional proposed revision, which is at the front desk, which says if you even have five or more campsites and it's only family members, then immediate family members, and then that's okay on your private property. And also, you can have larger gatherings as long as, like a family reunion.
Correct, that come in from out of state,
yeah,
that have a lot of
campers. Just hour limits on how many you can do that.
Okay.
So,
and so I just wanted to be clear about that because this was, yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Anyone else, please? Could you just tell us who you are, please?
Yes, I'm Kathy Ballone.
Hi, Kathy.
The owner of the old gate farm. Just want to give you a copy of the letter that we wrote. I'm going to read out loud.
There you go.
We are writing this letter as property owners who are passionate about improving the wonderful town that we live in. Our property, the old game farm, is cherished by many thousands of people all over the United States, and our plans to preserve it as a public recreation space is our ultimate goal. As such, we felt it necessary to comment on the proposed campground regulations. There are already several other government regulations and codes that all campgrounds must follow. As you are well aware, visitors and tourism in this region is a very large driver of economic activity here in Catskill, as it is in many communities throughout New York. These sites attract outside visitors to our community who spend money not only in these sites directly, but also in our other town businesses, such as restaurants, retail shops, entertainment venues, and spas. All of these locations provide valuable services and jobs for our residents, as well as donations for our charities. And lastly, they pay significant taxes downstate or by frequently local businesses to our community to support the many important services that are provided by the municipality while helping to keep residential taxes affordable. Campgrounds are a very large driver of this crucial tourism. As more is spent on multi-day outings than on day trips or one day trips, a 2017 study by Tourism Economics Attached, which I gave you a copy of, found that campgrounds provided $1.2 billion in economic impact and nearly 12,000 jobs in New York State in 2015 alone. In addition, they provided nearly $100 million in tax support to their communities, all while providing good, clean, wholesome family fun and relaxation for its participants. As such, communities should support these endeavors, provided there are reasonable regulatory protections provided for their operation. Unfortunately, we believe these regulations go beyond these basic protections and are ultimately going to prove to be a serious deterrent to any fund wishing to start or expand a campground in our community. This special permit / license is proposed to be an annual approval, which is hard on any new entrepreneur who is going to be investing significant sums of capital in a new venture. This restriction may also affect access to long-term capital borrowing, as there is less long-term stability, as well as the ability to sell the property in the future. Having total permit revocation held over owners' heads for relatively minor infractions, which cannot be corrected in a single five-day period, does not instill confidence in starting this forum endeavor. It also seems unfair. Does the town require such approvals of other businesses in town or even itself with such a rapid revocation process? We would recommend making it a permanent approval that is subject to enforcement actions for violations. This would give operators much more confidence in their investment in our community. Existing zoning and code enforcement already covers most of these topics. As you likely know, compact development is the new gold standard in land use planning. These kinds of development, known as conservation or cluster development, require the allowed number of housing units for a parcel be built on individual smaller lots, allowing a larger portion of the underlying parcel to remain undeveloped. This protects large portions, perhaps 50% or more, of the original parcel from development, therefore protecting natural elements, scenic views, watersheds, and sensitive environmental features. As a result, you create a more sustainable development with less infrastructure to develop and maintain, while better protect the environment and aesthetic quality of the area, which is a win-win situation. The proposed development density and site requirements of this proposal run contrary to this compact development theory. Having only one unit per acre will unreasonably lessen the number of units allowed at any one campground, requiring additional campgrounds to be developed elsewhere to accommodate the needs for campers wishing to stay in our town. Developing more of our natural spaces. The minimum size of 42 by 42 foot is much larger than most every campground in existence today, as are the required internal site setbacks. These large campsites will cause an excessive amount of land development to carry the approval number of sites, causing an unnecessary loss of natural space and habitat, and an increase in impervious surfaces. We are fortunate enough to have an unusually large parcel that is already developed, which has already led us to in the direction of planning our sites to be far larger than the industry standard, but this is unfair to the average property slash campground owner and entrepreneur. We had reached out to Homer Staves, president of Staves Consulting Company. He was one of the founders of KOA, and he's been on many boards nationwide in the camping community for over 25 years. And when he read over the law, he actually thought the one unit per acre was a typo. Like, he said that it was something that he had never seen before, and he was taken back by it. He just assumed it was a typo. Additionally, the requirements mandate 12 or 18 foot wide paved roadways throughout the campground. This runs contrary to both aesthetics and environmental stewardship. People go to campgrounds in the country to get away from the hot paved streets of their suburban city lifestyles. Having paved roads and huge lots make the campground look more like a subdivision rather than a natural safe place to escape. Furthermore, these roads will cause much more environmental damage through their increased runoff, which is the prime driver of water quality degradation. In addition, the manufacturer of all the blacktop will waste tons of petroleum products and cause many tons of CO2 to be released in their manufacture and installation, worsening climate change. Pavement is simply not necessary or proof. It is already an industry standard that if you want to be classified as a big rig-friendly campground, to have a certain percentage of widened roads, but this should be left to the business owner's discretion if they want to have that higher rating than travel guides. Limiting the location of campgrounds to areas with streets with low density will unreasonably limit the locations where campground development will be possible. Typically, areas with higher densities have better roads, so this seems counterproductive. Plus, a literal reading of this section would indicate that if one property with a home that is less than 1 acre in size is present, thus creating a residential density of more than one unit per acre anywhere along the access road, then it would preclude that road from being used for access, which seems overly constructive, as this would include most roads in town, including the ones used to access our property. It is also unreasonable to not allow RVs to park temporarily within the roads of the park. This is a common occurrence as people register and then park their rigs in campground. Often two or three rigs may travel together and may help each other into their sites one at a time or stage them as they prepare to leave. Any trouble caused by this are strictly internal to the campground operation and are not a cause for additional regulation. The regulation should be changed to prohibit long-term parking slash camping on roads. Inspection of the campground by the code enforcement official at all reasonable times without notice could be problematic, especially when inspecting facilities of the opposite sex. Furthermore, access to vendor stands is not proper without the vendor being present. What if something turns up missing or damaged? Would the town be held liable or responsible for that? There are generally many limitations and stipulations proposed, which include, but are not limited to, fire pits needing to be affixed to the ground and made of fire brick, which is not practical for both cleaning out the fire pits as well as the need to be able to move them based on the needs of campers' equipment. Each RV may have slide-outs or connections in different configurations regarding the fire to be located in different areas of the site. In conclusion, we believe this to be just an example of over-regulation.
You're in.
There was an awful lot of things in there, and I didn't catch all of them, but the ones that I did catch, we don't require that the roads be paved.
There's nothing in there on paving. I just want to be clear on that.
I believe that it says on the side. Follow town regulations.
Yes. All developments need to follow town regulations, so emergency vehicles can fit down.
And private roads don't need to be paved. Public roads do. And the other item I heard was about the fire brick for the fire pit. We allow for other equipment, fire and heat resistant construction. So what we're saying here is that the construction of the fire pit is not made with combustible materials.
Most campgrounds just use
semi-truck firing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. That's not a
combustible. Not combustible, so that would qualify.
Okay. Well, it definitely states very clearly fire brick in the law.
Well, okay. I don't want to argue with you, but there was a line on the same sentence that says, for equipment, fire, heat resistant construction. So maybe we need to clarify the language.
Yeah, I think that needs to be clarified.
I guess that's because it's not necessarily its intended use as a fire ring. I mean, I don't think anybody decided that this is an intended use. You can't go out and buy it for that use.
Yeah.
We get it from used tires.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking with the president of Campground Owners in New York today, his strong recommendation is metal pits.
Yeah. And that's what
he said that's what he recommends to all his members.
Which is the inside
members.
Of the tire.
Yeah. So,
and I know the state campgrounds are all going to ceramic.
Right.
And this kind of, we're like, they want us to do what the state campgrounds are doing instead of what we're already
right.
doing.
So, again.
No, it just has to be flame
right.
fireproof.
Right. So, again, no good deed goes unpunished. I understand the observation, the editorial observation about overregulation. No one got up the morning that we started working on this and said, gee, I think I want to overregulate the heck out of the town of Catskill. Okay? Just so everybody understands. Seriously, folks. The idea here is when I get a call from somebody that says, I tried to get an ambulance and I couldn't get by, that's when I worry about my town. All right? So if that's in there, it's about that. And it's about the guys that volunteer that just need to get there. So that was the intent of that. The editorial about the I couldn't, if you tested me on what material, completely understand. I think the phrase was added to make sure that we had a bucket around that. So, Kathy, you and I have talked several times. Clearly, you're going to want to participate in this. We will take your comments here. We also got a letter, and we had a personal phone call from Don Bennett, who is, I want to get his total right, Campground Owners of New York, regarding, writing to you. I won't read the whole thing, but totally understands the concerns, also understands that we've got things like yurts and tiny homes and other things that are beginning to come into our community that, again, we don't want to overregulate, but we need to understand how they live in our community. So we had the same amount of people, as I said, with same amount of people in this room that were kind of struggling with an eco camping site coming into another part of our community. Livid. Why didn't we turn the land over to conservation, etc.? So as I said, when we started this tonight, we got to land somewhere in the middle here, and certainly engagement from the people who do this for a living is the way that we get this to the next place and rounds of concern. from Mr. Bennett. Again, I want to thank you for being proactive and wanting the best for the community that you serve. However, if the bill were to pass in its current fashion, it would create many hardships to current operators, totally discourage any future opportunities that may arise. We'd enjoy the opportunity to meet in person, provide any resources that we currently have available at Campground Owners of New York to help assist you in any way that we can. Thank you for your time. Please let me know if I can be of service. So, and he provide us, and actually there were some things in here that he thought we had done correctly, but I, you know, you don't want to hear that. anyone else, please? Mark, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Good.
I'm Mark Esterson. I was born in the town of Catskill in 1962. There are three types of people who live in our communities. They're the born and bred, they've been here forever, they still remain here. There are the transplants that have come here from somewhere else. And there are people like me, the expatriates, that ran screaming at 18 years old because there was nothing going on here. And no way for anybody to actually get a decent job back in 1980. Then we came back, and we see exactly what we all share here, which is an exceptional community, an amazing destination, and a place where every dollar in tourism that comes into this and spent on a room or a location generates $10 in the local economy. I'm the most proactive Green County proponent on the planet. As a matter of fact, I have the privilege of running the Investing Green program, okay? But I did a little math. The nice thing is, when you come to a town meeting, the law is actually here. You can pick it up and read it. I read it. This won't give, you know, 15 minutes. Read through it, okay? Get what it is. But one thing that did stick out to me the most, though, is this whole idea of one site per acre of arable land. We were talking about earlier about the fact that 1,200 square feet is like the normal size of a campsite.
That's the minimum.
Minimum size in Yucatan here, right?
Right.
Which, by the way, just has a really, really successful tiny houses resort that's been brought in that is generating an amazing amount of traffic.
Carol's been excellent.
Doing a great job, right? And that's fantastic. And we want to do the same with the town of Castle.
Trying for 9 months.
Here's the thing. Let's do the math. Do a Google search. How many square feet are in an acre?
43,560.
Right. So you get 1,200 square foot of campsite, and you can only have one every 43,000.
No.
That's incorrect.
That's what it means, guys. And that's okay. That's what it means.
Elliot, can you clarify that?
That's not what it says.
Okay.
Elliot,
I'm not saying that's not what the intent was. I'm sure you guys all have the best intentions to make, but the law beats, like, for instance, even with the fire pits. I get where you're saying, man, it does say it has to be affixed to the ground, permanently affixed. When you pull an RV into a fire pit area, you know, and you might need to move it. So it's those types of things that I hope and pray that this working session will deal with, because I believe, honestly, that the new business that is coming through and coming into the county is nothing but positive for all of us.
So the only thing that I wanted to say is I want Elliot to clarify that, because go ahead, Elliot.
Square footage formula, please.
42 by 42.
If you take an acre and make it a square, it's about 208 feet by 208 feet. So we're not saying that there can only be one camping unit every 208 feet. It's a density calculation. So saying that it's one camping unit per acre, you know, gives the visual picture of, you know, this poor little tent every 208 feet. That's not what it's saying.
Okay.
But
what is it? I mean, I'm not living a quarter acre lot, okay, in the town of Castle. That's my dwelling. Mm-hmm. So I got plenty of room. You know, I got a neighbor that's right next to me on another quarter acre lot. You know?
Yeah.
I don't get what.
I mean, I think it's something that we should revisit, you know, with the people who are running businesses. You know, I don't think we're inflexible about that.
Awesome.
With regard to the fire pits, the intent, at least my intent, and as part of the committee, was so no one has a bonfire 2 feet away from their tent. So, you know, maybe we could change the language to have some separation between the fire and the camping unit so that doesn't happen, and allow it to be moved. But that was the intent of having...
Just as an FYI, on all my tenting sites, I fixed them because I don't want burden that hits every 5 feet. Someone says, oh, I want it here, I want it there.
Right.
I had fixed mine with tent site. But the RV sites, you don't know where their awning is, you don't know where the slide is.
Right.
So there's usually about three spots so they can pick one.
Yep.
Well, we can address that by just having a certain amount of feet from the slide.
Yes, I'm sorry, I can't see the hand attached, but...
Hi. My name is Marty. I'm not in this town. I'm in Caro, and I have a tiny house. And what I'll tell you about the experience, I read these laws. I went from four sites to now we're adding another four sites, and a total of nine. And the New York State Department of Health does its job, and to make regulations on business owners harder than the state is crazy. We invested $2 million into the town of Caro to have sites spread apart. And our sites are very smart, spread apart. We have the Department of Health there. First thing they look, you exceed all expectations. You got to count what it's costing to run those lines. It's beyond new businesses' ability to.
And I just want to clarify, I don't believe tiny houses are part of this exercise. Is that correct?
Tiny houses on wheels.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay.
So I would just say, if you want to attract business, based on this, the only positive thing that I can see that would work is your requirements for a campground are less acreage.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have a hard time as a new business owner who's looking to expand and buy additional property to more tiny houses.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't come to the town of Caskill with these regulations for that part.
So just... The town of Caro came to us and was inquiring about stuff. So, thank you.
A business owner is putting into the business.
Understood completely.
Yep. What it is, how many tiny houses you have to rent.
Understood.
X number of years to
return on investment.
Right.
Completely understand.
These laws really scare me away from owning a campground. They freak me out.
Okay, so that's why we're here tonight, right? Okay.
And it's not a law. It's a proposed law.
Oh, probably, excuse me, proposed law.
Right.
Nothing's a law yet.
Which is why we're here tonight, which is hopefully why we're making progress.
It scares us that these laws are being proposed, is I think what a lot of people are feeling. My name is Daniel Ellett. I've been a resident of this community my entire life, other than the 4 years that I served in the military. And I own two large tracts of property in the area, and I would love to do something to draw commerce into this area. But when I hear that there's laws being drafted that say these things, it scares me. And I would love to do something that would draw business into this area to do something. And the fact that you're pretty much what you're saying now, I'm worried just what I've heard tonight. My idea is to go ahead and have rustic camping sites where I take people into the mountain and set up a tent. Now you're going to make regulations on how many tents I can have on the side of the mountain. If there's a group of five people that want to go on a tenting excursion, I take them hiking onto my property. Now I'm against regulation, and now I'm going to have a road for a fire truck or an ambulance to access this point that we're camping on my property. That kind of worries me a little bit about whether or not I can even do something like this. And these are things that worry me as somebody. I'm paying taxes on large parcels of property here in this community, and I want to do something to better this area. And being a veteran, I'd like to get the veterans involved and do something in this community to where the veterans can come, PTSD, animals farming, farm to table, camping, get families and the community united. And pretty much what you're saying here tonight, you're restricting what the property's owner's values are or what our rights are about what we can actually do with our property. It's like telling us that we can only do certain things with our property. And we love this property. It's ours. We pay taxes on it. And we want to be able to make decisions for ourselves or do something. And I worry, I have family functions. I get friends and family together. I do a cider pressing party, maple syrup party. There's people that drink too much. We set up tents down in the back. I could have 30 people down in the, in the, in the back in my field tenting. And you're going to tell me I'm wrong for having my friends and my, my family and everybody there? I don't understand how you can make the, this regulation to where you can control about what we do on our own property for, the, for that. It, it scares me that, that these laws are even being tabled. The last time I addressed this board was about the burn ban, and that was years ago. And it was also about farmers and about bears coming into the community and wrecking crops. And me being a lonely beekeeper, I got one hive, and a bear can come in and get to my bees, and I can shoot it dead. But a farmer in this area can't do anything from a bear wrecking acres of property. And again, a law was tabled to where things were going to happen and where you could restrict us from burning brush. As a farmer, I'm wanting to clear hedgerows and that type of stuff. And they were, you were trying to pass a law back then to restrict that from happening. Or the fact that as a farmer, they couldn't protect their, life, their livestock or their crops from damage from bears. And I voiced my opinion then. So now I'm voicing my opinion about this here. As a property owner in this area, I haven't read the whole gist of the law or, you know, what you guys are proposing, but just a little bit that I saw, I suggested this back then, and I'm suggesting it now, that you definitely take time and think things through and don't rush to a conclusion and make a law that, that's going to restrict things. That, that you definitely take time to think things through and see everybody else's value. You know, my ancestors have been in this, this area forever. My poor great-grandfather was captured by Indians and marched to Canada and sold as a slave. And I love this area, and I love these mountains. And I don't understand why Greene County is like the last to evolve or last to make business. This used to be a booming metropolis. Kings and queens and dignitaries from all over the world used to come to this area because it's so beautiful. And I feel the same way as they did. It's beautiful, and we need to make something of this. We need to pull together and make something of Catskill again. Put it back on the map. And it feels like everybody's restricting it with laws and this and that. You can't do this and you can't do that. And I worry about my mountain property that I have. The Lana view shed, it's like I have a $1 million view up there. I can put up beautiful tenor sites or take people camping. And then somebody's going to say something across the river because they can see my tent from a lawn. So they're restricting my ability to make a livelihood and live in my community and be able to make a living here. And this worries me to my soul about this. And I really think that, I really hope that everyone here thinks these things through and really digs deep in their hearts and thinks about what they, where they're going and what we want to do. Do we want business here? I've seen so many opportunities where businesses could have been here and it gets shut down. Cement plant wants to get rebuilt, it gets shut down. I've seen people lose jobs around here. I want to make a living here. I want to live here for the rest of my life. And I feel with these laws that, that you're like punishing the people that have been here forever. Why? I don't understand this, you know. I pay my taxes, I work hard, I want to do something, and there's like a law, or you got to pay another fee, or another this or that. It's like, we're just trying to struggle here. I feel like we've been in the apocalypse for my whole life. I said when shit hits the fan, we're going to laugh it off, because we've been living in the depths of hell our whole life here in Greene County. Everybody else around us, to the south, to the north, across the river, there's businesses, there's things happening. Why is it not happening here? That's my question. Why? Why are we not allowing it?
Can I just ask two quick ones real quick? Because I know that it's relative to what you say. There's a whole like Airbnb, there's businesses that are coming up for camping, the same concepts. So does this apply to just campground business owners, or would someone that had whatever the stipulation for this type of commerce, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but so Airbnb, you can rent your own home out. What is it?
Tenter.
Yeah, tenter. So would these regulations also be applicable to a private property owner who met the requirements for that business to have just one or two sites, or would they be, because their property is that, would they have to accommodate whatever the planning is? And my other question was, or maybe it's just something to consider for those of you who are involved in that. What was the purpose for this? I think that you